Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science interviews and great music from Austin, Texas. I'm Jorge Salazar. Here's a scientist soundbite.
There are two major meteor showers that go on in late July and, you know, from early to mid-August. And those two are the Delta Aquaridge showers. And then combined with that, starting in the early part of August and going into mid-August, you have the Perseid meteors.
That's Sky Watcher Deborah Bird. More with her later, but first, Science News of the Week with Michael Brennan and Emily Howard.
NASA announced on July 18th that the Cassini spacecraft orbiting Saturn has captured images at visible wavelengths of lightning on the day side of Saturn. This is a first. We had images of lightning on the night side of the planet, but daytime lightning at visible wavelengths, which would need to be very intense according to these scientists, had never been seen. The lightning was part of a vast storm on Saturn that raged throughout 2011.
Most worlds orbiting distant suns are larger than Earth. It makes sense we'd see the biggest ones first. But on July 18th, astronomers using NASA's Spitzer Space Telescope and at the University of Central Florida announced the possible detection of an exoplanet only two-thirds the size of Earth, orbiting the red dwarf star GJ-436, just 33 light-years away. If they're right, this might be the nearest world to our solar system that is smaller than our home planet.
An ice island twice the size of Manhattan is breaking off the Petermann Glacier in Greenland this week. This is the second time in 2 years that this glacier has been seen to lose a massive chunk of ice. Scientists first reported this year's calving on July 16th. NASA's Aqua satellite captured the view from space, which you can see at earthsky.org. Search for the word glacier.
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, and the National Climatic Data Center, NCDC, have now released the Global Climate Report for June 2012. In this report, NOAA states that June 2012 was the fourth warmest June since record-keeping began in 1880. At the same time, the land and ocean average surface temperature for June 2012 for the Northern Hemisphere showed June 2012 as the all-time warmest Northern Hemisphere June on record.
On June 25th, the U.S. Geological Survey reported that federal scientists observed three species of endangered Hawaiian forest birds in new areas of the Hakalauan Forest National Wildlife Refuge. It was the first time in 30 years that the birds were observed in lower portions of the Hawaiian Island forest, and the new findings are giving hope to recovery efforts. That's Science News of the Week. I'm Emily Howard.
I'm Michael Brennan. This week's Song of the Week is by Slow Train. It's called Not the Only One, from their album, Bound to Find You Out.
There's one thing I can say, is that no matter what I say, nobody's listening anyway. Nobody's listening anyway. But I'd like to get you to, so I pen these words for you, like you said you like me too, because you said you like me too. But it's not the only one, he's only just begun. He's only just begun. It's not the only one. He got the best of me. He asked me, can you see? Said I could not see. He got the best of me, but I like to have some too. So I purchased this for you, like you said you like me too, because you said you like me too. But it's not the only one. He's only just begun. He's only just begun. It's not the only one. I wrote a song for you, I did the best that I could do. I do no wrong to you, it's true. You know I knew you all along. It's true, it's true. You know I knew you all along. It's true, it's true. And I saw through you all along.
We're Earth Sky, broadcast on over 1,200 stations worldwide, including Voice of America. Deborah Bird is here with some great news about the global night sky. Get ready for meteors. Welcome, Deborah.
Hey, Jorge. Oh, it's that time of year again, the time to start thinking about observing meteor showers. And we've had so many questions about this in the past few weeks. So every summer, and I'm talking about Northern Hemisphere summer now, we get these questions from people about when can I see the meteors? Because people know that summer is a great time for watching meteors.
And this is, by summer, we mean July, right?
Well, July and August. So what happens is that there are two major meteor showers that go on in late July and, you know, from early to mid-August. And those two are the Delta Aquaridge showers, which really don't have a very definite peak, but some say they peak in late July. I've really seen them all the way into, say, the middle of August. So they sort of ramble along for a couple of weeks there, the Delta Aquaridge meteor shower. And then combined with that, starting in the early part of August and going into mid-August, you have the Perseid meteors.
Awesome. So is this just for the Northern Hemisphere or the Southern Hemisphere too?
Well, both hemispheres can see this, but what's great about the meteor showers for the northern part of Earth is that it's the season of summer now, so it's warm. For the southern hemisphere, really the Geminid shower in December is probably a more popular shower because it's in their summer. But for us, the Perseid shower is the one that most people know and love, the August Perseid shower. It's a very reliable shower, tends to produce about 60 meteors an hour. That's about one a minute, and they come in little clumps and bursts. So if you take a lawn chair and lie outside in a dark place, you'll see the meteors.
Yeah, I was going to ask. I've got my list out here. I'm ready to write down everything I need in order to see the meteor. So tell us, what do we need in order to see these?
Well, the number one thing you need is a dark sky. So you want to go someplace where, you know, if you can get to a place where you can see the Milky Way, that's ideal. The darker, the better. People do sometimes tell us that they see meteors from within the city. And my kids have told me they've seen them off our back deck. So that's super cool. And if you can do that, that's great. But if you really want to have the experience of a number of meteors falling throughout the night, you're going to want to go to a dark location. So all you really need after that is just something to lie down on. And I like to take one of those, you know, lawn chairs that you can, those folding lawn chairs that you can just open up and lie down and, you know, look up and watch the sky. There's no particular direction that you have to look in, and that's a misconception that's grown up in the past few decades, that there's some place in the sky that you have to kind of keep your eyes riveted on in order to see the meteors. That's not the case. The meteors do radiate from a particular point in the sky, but they'll appear all over the sky.
So, Deborah, are we going to have dark skies for this meteor shower?
Well, the moon is always a factor. So here in 2012, as you're hearing this, you're hearing this probably around mid to late July, and the moon is in a waxing phase at this point. So the moon is getting larger in the evening sky. Now, the best time to watch for meteors is after midnight, and that's very important. Look for meteors after midnight. The reason you'll see more then is that the part of Earth you're standing on has turned you in the direction of Earth's motion and orbit. So the meteors are coming into the atmosphere over your head, and you're just going to see more meteors at that time. So after midnight. So when will the sky be moon-free after midnight? And the answer to that is that it'll be moon-free after midnight, you know, for a lot of July, most of July, in fact. The first quarter moon comes on July 26. First quarter moon sets around midnight. So all the way up until, say, you know, the end of July, say starting now until the end of July, if you go out outside after midnight, you're likely to see some meteors, especially as we get closer to the end of July. But then the moon is going to start becoming a factor in that sky after midnight, and full moon, in fact, comes on August 2nd. So, you know, the full moon, people do see meteors in the light of the full moon, you know, not ruling it out, but then all eyes are going to turn on the calendar toward the peak of the Perseid meteor shower, which comes from late at night on August 11th to early in the morning on August 12th. So where will the moon be then? There will be a moon in the sky, in the morning sky then, in the sky after midnight. There will be a moon in the sky for the peak of the Perseid meteor shower this year. But the closer you get to that August 12th date, the less of a moon you'll see. So if I had to, you know, give you some advice, Jorge, on what exact date you should watch the Perseid meteor shower this year, it's a very specific date. It's late at night from August 11th to early in the morning on August 12th. There will be a little crescent moon in the sky then, but not as much of a crescent moon as you would have seen the day before or the day before that. So early in the morning, August 12th, best time to see the Perseid meteors in 2012.
Great tips for watching meteors. Thanks, Deborah.
Thank you, Jorge.
Earth Sky's Deborah Bird, and we're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. Sky, broadcast on over 1,200 stations worldwide, including Voice of America. Ryan Britton is back with another weird science story. Welcome, Ryan.
Thanks, Jorge. Today, I have a story about a probable scientific explanation for a very strange and weird occurrence that happened during the United States Civil War. So this is 140 years ago, and it was reported that wounds of some of the soldiers glowed in a pale blue light. So many people saw it, but didn't know what it was.
Wow, so this is light that came from the gunshot or the sword wound of soldiers in battle.
Right, the phenomenon was called angel's glow because the wounds that glowed tended to heal faster and cleaner than the wounds that didn't. Some thought that angels were healing them.
So this is kind of weird. Is it true? How do we know what's going on?
Well, there's a strong theory. A bioluminescent bacteria, it lives in the stomachs of nematodes. Now, nematodes are a species of worm. They're these teeny tiny little worms that live in parts of the United States South. This bacterium does glow a pale blue, as reported, and it also generates its own antibiotics. Now, it generates its own antibiotics because normally it lives in these little worms, these little nematode stomachs. These worms burrow into insect larvae as part of their normal life. And then they vomit up this glowing bacterium. So the bacterium not only kills the larvae, but it also kills other bacteria within the larvae. So that leaves the worm and the glowing bacteria to eat and grow undisturbed.
Yeah, so let me get this straight. So the soldier's wounds possibly had worms.
It's gross to think about. But it's theorized that the bacterium liked the wounds, and there they killed other bacterium that were present. The wounds were actually cleaner in a way.
That is really gross. Mm-hmm. But where can people find out more?
Well, you can go to mentalfloss.com. There's a good article there.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you.
Earth Sky's Ryan Britton. We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. We'd love to hear from you on Facebook. Tell us where you're from. You can find us as Earth Sky. New evidence shows that billions of rocky planets might orbit the habitable zones around red dwarf stars in our own Milky Way galaxy. That's according to the European Southern Observatory. They made the first direct measurement of the frequency of planets around red dwarfs, which account for 80% of the stars in our galaxy. Here to talk more about these new observations is astronomer Stefan Udry at the University of Geneva in Switzerland. He's part of the European Southern Observatory HARP Science Team, short for High Accuracy Radial Velocity Planet Searcher. Dr. Udry, welcome.
Thank you very much.
What are the main results of your study on planets that orbit red dwarf stars?
Yes, we have a dedicated program searching for exoplanets around these low-mass stars. And we do that with a spectrograph that we have built or that has been built by a consortium led by our institute. And this instrument is the most precise one to measure the velocity of stars. And we detect the planet by seeing a change in the velocity of the star due to the presence of the planet.
Yeah. Tell us more about this. Media reports say that there are likely billions of planets that orbit these red dwarf stars. Tell us more about that.
Okay. The red dwarfs are interesting stars for several reasons. First, they are less massive than the Sun, so it's easier to detect the planet with our technique. That's the first point. The second point is that they are fainter than the Sun. So what we call the habitable zone, the zone with the good temperature for liquid water to exist around the star, is closer to the star than in the case of the Sun. And for us, with our technique of detection, we are more sensitive to planets that are close to their stars. So it's easier to detect habitable planets around low-mass stars, these red dwarfs, than around stars like the Sun. And on top of that, those stars are by far the most numerous one in the galaxy. So we have a sample of such stars, we look for planets, and we are finding that around 10% of them, roughly, they are rocky planets. And as there are 100 billion of those stars in the galaxy, we conclude that there are tens of billions of planets that are rocky around those stars in our galaxy. So we are on our way to detect places like the Earth where life could be developing. So all our work is on a road that at the end will lead us to the detection of life somewhere else in the universe.
You've been listening to astronomer Stefan Udry. We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. And that's our show. Thank you for joining us. This week's show was recorded at Earth Sky Studio B in Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world. Our producer is Michael Brennan. Executive producers are Peter Zandan, Ryan Britton, and Deborah Bird. Special thanks this week to our musical contributors. For more information on the science and the music you heard this week, visit our website at earthsky.org. EarthSky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next age. There are so many artists, too much hype, and not enough reason, I'm afraid. Silence is the song of the next age. But what we don't know won't hurt us. What we don't know.